ladies and gentlemen, congoers and car drivers. We're on our way back from Funkay Town in Knoxville, and we figured it's time for another episode. My name is Jared, and I've got a car full of wordsmiths with me today on the mic, Anna.
Hello.
Ian.
Hello.
Kaylee.
Hello.
And sitting next to me, but not on the mic right now, is Scott. Happy birthday, buddy. We're honored and grateful that you have joined us at our table. Here at the Game Table Podcast, we take a look at various board, card, and other tabletop games. We give an overview, provide a little insight on how to play, and share some of our thoughts, all in an attempt to give you an idea of how well it would fit for you and your table. Today, we will be looking at two different word games, Things and Rings and Landmarks. And we also take some time to talk about our favorite small convention, Funkay Town. First up, we will discuss Landmarks, designed by Rodrigo Rego and Danilo Valente, artwork by Aaron Ng, and published by Floodgate Games.
Landmarks is a 3-8 player game.
2-10.
Oh, not even close.
We're off the cuff tonight, people.
Landmarks is a word association game. Players are lost in the jungle, having wandered away from camp. Luckily, they have a malfunctioning walkie-talkie. One person has the map that shows all the way back to camp, but all the other pitfalls and traps along the way.
To be clear, the one person is back in camp because they were not brave enough to go venture off into the woods. It worked out, but they were still a coward.
But they can only communicate with the rest of the team through one-word clues. They will use these clues to get their friends back to camp and escape the island. Let's review.
For our second year in a row.
Yes.
We were at Funkay Town teaching games. It was a grand time.
It was fantastic.
Love being able to show people new games. It is a massive passion of mine. What about you, buddy?
Yeah, I think when in events like these, I will even we had the game of the hour, which is an hour of teaching these games, which we did for both of these. But another thing that I like to do is literally just walk around and find people that look like they're struggling or have the rule book wide open. And they look, it looked like they're in need. And so I'll just kind of swoop in and be the hero, I guess. But truly, I do like to go around and teach. And these are an event like this is such a great opportunity to use my knowledge that I have of the hobby and give it back to the hobby because I was in the same place at one point or another. And I think it's really cool when somebody did that for me. So to be able to reciprocate that and use that is a very cool opportunity. And I don't mind teaching. So I think it's really fun. And so this event, I feel like I get to do that more than many other times, even other game nights or whatever. I'll teach a game or be taught a game, but this is just like rapid fire teach,
yeah,
where I teach the same game like 10 times in a 30-minute gap.
It makes me want to go teach at bigger conventions. I don't know if you get that feeling as well, but I don't know. There's something about it that I'm like, man, I could do this more. But then I think about like life obligations, like kids and work and all that. And,
yeah,
you know, it kind of brings you back down to earth a little bit. But I feel like that would be just so much fun to be able to go to multiple conventions, teach games, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think, again, using those skills, the more games you play, the more you understand game mechanics. And I feel like we, as an example, these games particularly, we played a couple times for sure. But when you go and you teach it to a couple people, I guess, you know, there's that old saying that the best way to learn something is to be shown one time, then to do it one time, then to teach it to another time.
Makes sense.
And so in a way that this is represented is that when we play these games, we'll play them a couple times, sure. But I don't feel like I honestly really grasp it until I teach it to somebody that I now know how to, especially when explaining it to somebody else. Once I teach it one time, I now, the next time that I do it, it's going to be like a really good teach.
Yeah.
I feel like the first time I teach a game, I don't know how to explain it. I got to break down like each aspect of it. Something like this, where you're going to teach it 10 times. I apologize right now to the first group of every time I taught something, because I know that it was not the best of the But to the other times, I feel like they were spot on. So,
hey, listen, I forgive you, man.
Okay, great. I'm glad you did. I did not teach you, so it doesn't.
You did other games, just not those games. So you and I are going to talk about landmarks, and then Anna and Kaylee will come on and talk about things in Rings. We're all in the same van together riding back. But, you know, we don't want to get too many voices on one mic, so we'll just kind of bounce back and forth. But landmarks.
Yeah.
So it's a very interesting take on the word association game where one person has, there's multiple modes, right? So you have co-op and competitive, and one person has this board, or I'm sorry, a card, like in Codenames, and they know what the whole board is representing, but the rest of the table just sees a blank jungle in an island that they're lost in with a couple of words on it. And so this hint giver is going to try and navigate the group through the forest by coming up with a one-word clue. And that one word is going to be associated with at least one of the three words on the board, maybe two. And if you're associating with two, there's a certain spot you're wanting to go because it's all on a hex grid. And you're trying to navigate people through. Now, you can't just go to the exit because we need water to survive. We need to find treasures because it's not enough that we're lost and we have a busted walkie-talkie. We need to find treasure while we're out here. It's very important.
No, you can't leave empty-handed.
That would be foolish.
Yeah. You're already here. You might as well get treasure.
That's right. You're already in a bad situation. So, treasure it is.
So let's make it better.
Unfortunately, you could get cursed. But you could protect yourselves from being cursed by finding an amulet.
Yes.
Which is apparently the treasure and the amulet are on the map.
They're different.
The coward back at camp is looking at.
Yeah. And so, they're not different. The amulet's not treasure.
No, it's not.
It's just an amulet.
It's worth nothing except that it protects you from curses.
That's right.
It's silly. It's silly.
Yes.
I like it in one aspect, but then when I start thinking about it, I'm like, huh, this
doesn't
is
really
kind of goofy.
Yeah, it's fine.
If you're going to have qualms with the amulet and the treasure being on the map, the curses are also on the map that the person is looking at.
It's wild.
And traps.
This person who knows all, how do they know all these things?
They have all the information.
They're the knower. They know all.
Well, I think they're the coward, though.
No. They're the ones that got trapped back at camp.
No, they chose to stay. So you're navigating these people who did get lost through the woods to find treasures, to not get cursed, to not become so dehydrated that you die, things like that. And you're on this like timetable because once you're out of water, you do die. So it's a problem. And then Ian, if you'll kind of quickly go over how things change in the competitive mode, and then you and I can talk about it.
Yeah, so with the competitive mode, you will need two equal teams. Generally, that's how I would recommend playing it. And so, and I think this is much better at a higher player count. I think maybe six or more players would be best in this mode. Basically, it takes out the water aspect, and it takes out the limited amount of tiles slash clues that the players can have. But you split into two teams, and it is basically a rush to get as many treasures before the other team. And then whoever has four treasures will win. There are a total of six treasures on the map that your team can gain. There are four for each team that are colored, and then there are two generic treasures that the players can gain. If a team captures one of the other team's treasures, it goes to their board. So if you capture another team's treasure, it actually hurts you and gives them a one-up. On top of that, there are curses as well, and there is only one amulet to share amongst the teams. So when players when a team gains the amulet, they lock it into their little dry erase board, and the other team can't get it because you can only place the tile in each location once. You can't double place. And so it is a nice little rush to get those treasures. I found in these games that it was very fascinating to see the teams really struggle on not sharing a clue they got to the other team's treasure. So I think it adds this competitive aspect that is good, but you still get a team because you're playing with a team that's really fun and being able to use your teamwork to and then your own clue giver. So you have your own clue giver on top of all this. So it's not just like one clue giver for everything. It's now you have two clue givers and two teams. So
I think you and I have the same consensus that if you have a lower player count, somewhere between 2 and 4, and you want to bring this out, I would play cooperatively. And if you want to, if you have a big group, I would almost exclusively play this competitively.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I would, I think, yeah, absolutely. What it seemed to be is any player count over 6, it seemed that the players didn't have as much of a voice.
Yeah.
Because you are drowning it out by the amount of people deciding. And so when 4 or 5 people say, yeah, I really like, I think that's it. And then you're like, well, I don't know if that's it. Well, right. Well, you're the odd man out. So what does it matter? We're going to go vote with the majority more than likely anyway. So
it does have a similar feel to Codenames, where either the team's going to work together or it's not.
Yeah.
And it does become harder at those higher counts for that to be the case.
In co-op form.
In
yes.
co-op form. That's correct.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, what are some things, and we'll kind of keep these brief because I want to get to Funky Town discussion.
Yeah.
But what's something that you really like about this game?
I prefer the competitive.
Yep.
The co-op is fine. I don't know. I think it shines in the competitive setting a lot more. I don't know how much I would ever play the co-op. There's just better games. But the competitive is unique in its own right. And it basically, you know, if you're playing with a team of, you know, if you have 10 players, you're playing with teams of 5, but you separate and one more player from that entire pool to be the clue giver. So now it's a team of 4. And I think 3 to 4 players per side is a really good mix of being able to have good discussion on where a tile would be placed, and the word that the clue giver is giving can target it to the 3 players over like 7. And so I think it's a really good opportunity for good teamwork. But also you're trying to work quickly. And so you're trying to compete with the other team across from you and not gain their treasures, but also find treasures faster than them. And I think it's a really neat idea. I mean, you don't see in games like these, you see cooperative word association games, but this is doing it in a different way where it adds this cooperative competitive version. And I really like that.
Yeah, for sure. I think I want to add on to the competitive side of it that we saw this weekend, which I loved seeing it this weekend so much more than I loved us playing it at home. Getting to see people really get into it because of the competitive nature of gamers and just when they sit down at the table, I think there's like a cool activity puzzle aspect when you get into a co-op word game, but there's something missing. Like you get to the end, you're just like, all right, that was cool.
Yeah.
But with competitive, it's drawing in something for you without the game, and it gives everybody an incentive to want to win because it's like, oh, I want to be able to show them that we can do this faster than them and we can find this thing faster and we know our words and, you know, and there's extra level of thinking
yeah.
for the clue giver because you're navigating around the other team now instead of just here's this word that obviously needs to go right here.
I think, and there's not a ton of team games
mm-hmm.
that do it well, I guess, is what I'm getting
from
at.
From a competitive
from
standpoint.
From a competitive
yeah.
standpoint is that when you separate a group that may know other people on the other teams specifically is that you are bringing this edge of competition that is different. And so now you're like, because as an example, I had a table of 8 sit down
mm-hmm.
and most of the table knew each other. And so we played cooperative just to kind of give them a feel. And then I was like, all right, y'all, I'm going to throw a nice little twist here. I'm going to split the table in half. And so literally they sat in a perfect like 4-to-4 ratio. So it was perfect. I was like, all right, we're going to split it right here down the middle. This team, you are now playing these players. You're now playing against them. And these are my 2 clue givers. And here you go. And so it was to like almost there was like the shift in attitude change. You're like, all right. We got to beat them now.
Yep.
And so for a team game, just in general, is a good opportunity to bring that competitive edge that just to really just try and beat your friends. And it brings this this collaboration that even just regular cooperatives don't. Because now I almost feel like you have more to play for.
Yep.
And again, it's all for the fun of gaming, but you're like, okay, I want to beat them. I want to beat the race. You want to win the race.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I think this adds that other cooperatives or word games aren't going to, you know, and even in Codenames, in my opinion, you are trying to beat the other team, but it doesn't have that race.
Sure.
So it, to me, I don't feel that race like I do in this.
I do like as well, I think something that draws me in is the concept behind the game. Because I think with Codenames, it's just very clearly, it's just a word game, right?
Right.
Like you're just trying to put words together.
Yeah, we're spies, kind of.
Kind of.
Not really. No, we're not.
I mean, whatever. But with Landmarks, at least you're attempting to throw a little bit of theme on there to kind of be like, hey, you're lost in the woods and this weird...
And there's an island board. It's a map. It's a cloth map.
It is. It's yeah. And the cloth map is cool. I do like that. And the fact that your tiles are all dry erase so that you're always using different words instead of just the ones that come in the box.
Yeah.
And it gives a lot more flexibility for the clue giver. I like those things. I think that that's a really cool aspect. The concept really drew me in once I really kind of understood what we were doing. I think it is, we kind of joked at the beginning in the how to play about, you know, the fact that this clue giver has all this knowledge, even though they're one of you in a lot of ways. But if you can get past that, I do like the, we're lost on an island. This one person's trying to walk us out. I think it's cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
I will say, I think the game is fine. It is a word game, so if you really like word game association games, or if you really like word association games, you're going to like this. I think that it's a little unique. It offers lots of modes, but it's still just, it's a word association game. And we have a lot of those. Despite the fact that the theme and the concept do change it up a little bit, I didn't feel like... I don't know. It didn't. Once we got from the concept of playing to actually playing, it didn't really draw me in that much, especially on the cooperative side. The competitive side, I was in on it. I was like, okay, do I even need Codenames anymore if I have this? Because this brings a new element. And for a lot of players who are in the hobby, they're kind of bored, they're kind of burned out on Codenames. So this gives a fresh feel for a competitive word association game.
Yeah. I think that if this game was only the cooperative version, that I would have really no need for it.
Or interest.
I think the theme is good enough that I might have interest. After playing it, I would not.
That's fair. Once I played it once, I would be done.
Not interested anymore with the cooperative version only, because I think Codenames does it better if we're just doing a word association. And then I really like Decrypto, which is another one that's a word association and kind of the mystery and similar. It's a similar game.
Sure.
But I think those do it better. So there's no reason for me to have it if it's just cooperative. The competitive version is where this shines, and you have a race that you're playing against another team. And not that these other games don't do that as well, because you have a clue giver, you have teams. So it's like, I guess it's the same, but this is just doing it in a different way. And I don't know why it's different, because really, if you think about it, it's just getting words faster. But I guess there's a trail. It's not about getting... That's what it is. It's not about getting specific words necessarily, right? Like, on these other things, is that, like, you have a word card, and that's it that I'm trying to get. It's not about getting the word. It's about getting the locations on the map right. And the clue giver uses words to guide their team.
Right.
And that's very different. You're guiding your team along this path. And that's different than just guessing words correctly, in my opinion.
Sure.
And so there is this rush to trek the path faster. So, yeah.
No, I think that's fair. And I do like that there's a little bit of a twist there. It does play quick, too. You know, it's one of those things where even competitive, cooperatively, like there's only so many tiles that you're working through in the co-op mode, and you're racing as quick as you can in the competitive mode. So it doesn't really drag. And again, like you said, having that, we're not just using words for the sake of words. We're using it to navigate, does add a nice twist to it.
Yeah.
The only other con that I have, and I think it is enjoyable, and I think it's something that a lot of people could get into. We saw that at the convention, actually.
Yeah.
So I'll just go ahead and say that. Getting 10 people around the table is tough.
Yeah.
You know?
No, absolutely.
To see this little board. I think the cloth is cool, and the tiles on top of it, that's fine. But, like, man, that's a hard ask when you have 10 people surrounding one table.
Yeah, I would say, that's true. Because then on my side of the table is upside down.
Yep.
Because the clue givers really need to be face up because they have the north arrow. Yeah. And so when you're like looking at the little card, you really need to know. So that's the issue there. And so that makes it challenging because you want to be able to see. But if you're on the other side of the table, the words are upside down. So you're just asking all the entire game. Like, what is that? Especially like my handwriting sucks. Yeah, so like I know people are like, yeah, okay. Thanks for that. But the other players are trying to find like, it's challenging. I would also say the competitive version is a little bit longer because now you have two people trying to think of clues.
Sure.
And the challenge is that when somebody else adds, you could be like, okay, my next turn, you could come up with a list. I have three words for the next three turns. Well, the issue is when they place a tile, it's on the shared board. So therefore, now you can't use that word. It's going to guide them right to the other team's treasure. So there's a little bit more thinking in between turns. And so it takes a minute. And so you just got to be mindful that it'll take a little extra of the co-op. You know, we played a game in 10-15 minutes where the competitive was a 30-minute game. So I think it doubles it potentially, depending on how well you do or how well the teams do. I will say maybe my game did take one of the games that I had took the longest because they each found three treasures and a curse. And so then it was like in the last stretch, like they were both trying to get that last one. So it was a close game.
Yeah. All right. What are you grading this thing?
On the scale of word association party games, I think it's on the competitive version, I would say it's like an 8, but on the other version, it's like a 3. So,
wow.
That's
okay.
I think it's a very fun, like, party word game. I've burned myself out on Codenames, so I'm not a fan. And I don't play word games.
Sure.
So I think I like this one. It's good.
I'm surprised by the 8, but I understand the scale has shifted to be more on the word association side.
Yep.
If I will split as well. If it's just co-op, I'm actually in agreement with you. It's like a 3. It's well, I feel like 3 is harsh. We'll say a 4.
Yeah, I don't like it at all. So
it just doesn't do a lot for us in our group, and I don't think that it really gives a real feeling of a payoff at the end. But the competitive mode, which this is the thought that I missed earlier that I was going to add, it has different levels of difficulty for both competitive and cooperative, which I do like. And so having the different flexibility for the competitive really adds a little bit to that. I would give it a solid 7 because it has the competitive mode built in. So I don't even know if it's fair to say the 3 and the 4 because you do have the competitive built in. But if you're looking for just a co-op experience, that's why that split rating is there. All right. Now let's discuss Things and Rings, designed by Peter C. Hayward, artwork by Snow Conrad, and published by Allplay. And we'll hand the mics over to Kaylee and Anna.
Things and Rings is a word logic deduction game where players have word cards in their hands and are trying to place the words in the appropriate categories, the rings. The catch, only one person, the knower, actually knows what the categories are. Players have to guess and then try to figure out the categories based on if the knower leaves their cards in the category they are placed or moves them to a different category. The goal seems simple. Get rid of all your cards. But don't be lulled into thinking that this is a simple game. This one is a real brain burner.
Now, Anna, Kaylee, y'all were both in the room with us teaching tables. Anything you want to add to either teaching this game or just games in general?
I can add something about teaching this game. I taught with you all last year at Fun K-Town. Like Jared and Ian, it's always a very thrilling experience. Like, you just feel so alive to get to bounce back and forth between the tables and introduce just huge amounts of people to this new game and see them enjoy it and help them troubleshoot it. The rest of the weekend, I was looking for people who had questions. And I remember we were playing a really complicated game, and there was a person, a table sitting next to us, and they kind of gave up on a game that I love because they couldn't figure out the instructions. And so I think the ability to be able to teach a game to where people can understand and ask questions instead of just reading a rule book is a real gift. And I love being able to do that. And particularly with this game, I think you can have a really bad play experience and it can mess it up for you, because if it's too hard at the start, then people get really discouraged. Or you can have a good play experience, and I think the teach is a big part of that.
teaching this one specifically, well, first I'll back up Anna and say that it was a very unique experience and a good way to meet people and navigate different table dynamics and just see how different people are going to play different games. And yeah, give them like a support system for their first time with a game. And I really enjoyed doing that. With Things and Rings specifically, I was worried about teaching this, if I'm honest, because I hadn't been exposed to it for that long. And the first time we practiced, it seemed like people were getting very irritated with themselves very quickly. And so I was like, oh no, I don't want to be at a table where a bunch of people are suddenly down on themselves, especially, you know, with my podcast where I talk about people's feelings. I was like, ah. However, the experience teaching it actually ended up being really great. And I don't know if that's credit to the players that I had or the setting or just everybody's attitudes being at a game convention and being extra excited. But we had a great time. And they learned it really fast. And they even had one start, because the knower has three cards they get to place to start. And we had one start that gave no clues as to the blue for 12 turns. Like, multiple rounds around the table and nothing landed in blue. And we powered through and it was okay. So I actually really enjoyed it.
That's awesome. I will just throw a quick thing in here for that, because I also resonated with, oh, teaching this game, this is going to be something, because I know how I feel. I was the Debbie Downer at our practice table.
I didn't say that.
I'll say it. And I was just like, this game makes me feel so dumb. And the way that I taught the tables that I had is I just went ahead and said, I was like, all right, guys, if you start your first game feeling emotions like frustration, annoyance, like I'm an idiot or somehow trying to screw you over, all those are very valid feelings in this space. This table is a very safe space. We're going to work through this together and it's going to be all good. Yeah. And I feel like it kind of set the bar to where, like, okay, I understand what I'm getting into and I still want to try it. But with that said, Anna, can you give us a quick overview of how to play?
Things and Rings is a game about putting things into rings, and the rings are different categories. So you're going to be dealt a hand of five cards at the start, and the cards will have all sorts of different things in them, like a goldfish or a boot or a wrench or a castle. Then you will arrange the rings. The game says you can start with less than three rings, but we just went ahead and started with all three. So the yellow ring, the words will be categorized if they're going inside of that ring or outside of that ring based on things that have to do with the word itself, like the spelling of the word, the syllables of the word, if it has a long vowel, short vowel, things like that. So then you have your blue ring, and how you categorize things as in or outside of the blue ring is based on the attribute of the thing in your hand. So for example, if the thing is made out of wood, or if the thing would make noise, or things like that. And then you have your red ring, and things are in or out of the red ring depending on their context in society. So for example, if they could be taken on an airplane, or if they could be used to hurt someone. So you arrange these three rings in a Venn diagram setting. So you're going to have all three rings overlapping with at least one other one, and then all three of them overlapping in the center. You look at your five cards, and one person will be the knower. That person is the only person that knows the category types. So they're the only ones that know what is the word category, attribute category, and context category. They will take three of their cards and they will arrange them in the rings according to how they fit within the category. So you can have something that will fit in multiple categories, or you can even have something that will fit in no category at all. And in that case, you put it outside of all three of the circles next to a little marker that says none. So after they've laid down three of their cards, kind of as clues to the categories, players will then go around and they will take turns laying down one of their cards. cards, and the knower, they'll lay it down in a category that they think it might fit into. The knower will then decide whether or not it actually fits in that category, and if it does, that person gets to lay down another card. If it does not, the knower will move it to the category that it does fit in, and then that person will draw a card, and play continues around like that until one person runs out of all their cards, and they are the winner. There is not necessarily a bonus point at the end for figuring out categories, but that is also a very fun thing to do, is at the end of the game, go around and see who has figured out the categories. I will say on the backs of the category cards, there are stars. So the categories are labeled by difficulty as well. So you've got your one star category types all the way up to 2 and 3 stars. And the 3-star ones will be much harder to figure out and much more difficult to discern the correct category versus the 1-star. So that's how to play.
All right, Kaylee. So we like to start with what draws you in. So in Things and Rings, I know Anna loves this game, so we'll start with you and then we can bring in the hype train. What draws you into this game?
I do love things to figure out, especially when they're around words. I feel like word-based clues, situational-based clues, I can get faster. So I like that as a challenge. So I like this game because it's colorful and it's fun to look at and it's a good time, but also because it was not a walk in the park. It's a challenge. And especially in those early rounds, you know, you're kind of throwing spaghetti at the wall.
So a lot of the word games we're familiar with, like code names or categories, or we have concept is another one where you're trying to guess different words or associate different words. A lot of times the game itself is not so difficult, but maybe you're trying to go faster than somebody else or figure out more than somebody else or trying to figure it out in a certain number of questions or something like that. There's ways to scale the game. This one's just hard right out the bat. Yeah. And so it's surprising when you're saying, oh, we're going to play a word game. And then everybody takes 2 rounds around the table and just feels like idiots because they haven't gotten anything right.
I constantly had to say nope. And they're like, oh, here's nope again.
You're like, I'm sorry, I don't know what a cave and an apple and a hammer have to do with each other, but they're all landing in the same spot.
But if you can get behind the fact that, hey, this is a very challenging word game, finally we have a word game that's really puzzly, that actually is going to be difficult, which I think is cool. I don't think there's another game quite that does it like that.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Anna, what draws you in?
Well, I mean, like Kaylee, I really like word games, and I also very much like puzzles. I like riddles, things like that. But I also, initially, I was drawn in, demoed this game at Gen Con, I think it was 2 years ago, they had a table and the guy was like talking in Dr. Seuss rhyme because the game is loosely Dr. Seuss themed. You can see when you look at the pictures and when you look at the game blurb on the back of the box. And so you stepped right up and he just played around with you and you had to guess. And by the time we were done, there were like 10 people gathered around the table. We were all trying to guess the categories. And so I guess the colorfulness, again, like the Dr. Seuss, the art, that initially drew me in. And then I feel like I got a fun game experience to boot.
Yeah, it's very pleasant and it's very nostalgic. And you immediately, I think when I opened one of my teaches, I just read the back of the box, like, this is a game of things that go in rings and only the knower knows, you know, I and everybody was immediately hooked on board, like, let's go for it. And that's a big draw. And then every time you get some silly art, like I think the artwork for Beard is like a 4-foot-long beard that curls back over itself, and people really love that, you know, and I really like that. Like, it's very, Seuss is an artist and a writer that everyone seems to still have collective memory of, and it's very fun to share, and it's a big draw.
Do you think, I'm curious, because I think from a player's perspective, this is difficult because you're trying to figure out this very quirky puzzle. Do you, as the knower, ever get intimidated by the fact that there's so much subjectiveness that you have to decide?
100%, yes.
Yeah, I definitely was. And as the knower, it feels very difficult to keep all that information in your mind at the same time. So I remember as a knower, I was constantly checking the three category cards and being like, okay, it does do that one. And it does do that. I'd almost have to like check, and then decide. And so I felt like the table was going to get frustrated with how long it was taking me to decide if their card was right or wrong every single time. I mean, eventually you get into it. And again, if you start with the one star cards, which we did not, we just drew cards when we first played and definitely ended up with the hardest yellow card in the entire stack for our very, very first game. But if you don't do that, I think you can ramp yourself up a little bit better and just have patience with yourself, because it is a lot for the knower to keep in their mind. And there is some subjection. If you think about some of the category ideas that I was talking about earlier, something like if something is made out of metal or not. Well, I mean, you got a toy train. Sure, it could be made out of metal. It could be made out of wood. Who knows? You kind of have to use your discernment based on that.
Yeah, I think the red category ends up being the most subjective because it's often phrased like most people have touched this before. Most people have this in their house. You could probably find this at a big box store, you know, whatever it might be.
Mine was can be dangerous.
Yeah, can be dangerous. I had one when we were practicing amongst ourselves, like featured in a myth or legend, part of a myth or legend or whatever. And I heard it come up at two different tables this weekend. And that was a wild one for me because you're like, okay, well, are we counting fairy tales as myth or legend, or do we only get to do epic Viking poetry like Beowulf? Like, what are we talking here? So I think when we played that, my red section was all over the place. It was apples and dragons and swords and worms, or like a mouse or a lion, because I think I was thinking of the Aesop's fable of, like, you know. And so that's very subjective. But if I might add, I think seeing the knower struggle helps the placers feel more relevant, because when the knower gets that look on their face like, no, I think it has to go here. Like, I think it does have a calming effect for your players.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And I had multiple times where I had to Google something during my teach.
Oh, no.
And they loved that. They thought, oh, okay, he's like actually really struggling here. And it became a thing where one of the players would stare me down every time they went to go play something somewhere. Like, I became the villain, and it was great.
Daring you to move it.
Yeah, go ahead, touch it, see what happens.
Go ahead. Oh, my gosh, love that.
So I'll say another pro of the game, I guess, is, and another thing that sets us apart from other word games is, I think a lot of times in word games, if you get it, then you've just got it. But in this case, I think you can start to get it. You know, like you can start to be like, oh, there's something about things being alive in this category. Maybe that's it. Or, oh, there's something about this in this category. Maybe that's it. So I appreciated that it's something you could almost, you could figure out parts as you went along, and it wasn't like the whole thing clicked at once or it didn't, which is something different from other word games that I've experienced before. Yeah.
We had a round where all one syllable words kept getting tossed in none, I think. Like, they were just not, they didn't qualify for anything. And so then the first person to throw down a one syllable word, and I think it ended in the dead center. It ended in all three rings, and the table just broke for a minute because we were like, wait, no. We had latched on to this one truth and it's not true, and it's very compelling.
I think two other things that make this game unique is, because it is a Venn diagram, the rule can apply, like you were just alluding to, multiple things of either it's in a mixture of two rings or all three of them. And that adds a new layer of complexity, because I could figure out maybe what the one ring means, but does it also apply over here as well? And trying to navigate the three different things from both sides is very interesting and complex. And the other thing that I'll add too is that it has a lot of flexibility. So Anna mentioned either easier cards or more difficult cards.
You can even play with fewer rings.
Now, exactly. Again,
we haven't done that, but I would recommend that if you're starting to teach this to kids, just start with one ring. And then you put things in the ring or outside of the ring, and they get the whole concept of this categorizing based on attributes. And yeah,
Yeah. And then the one last thing I thought of was you don't have to actually know the rule to win the game. You kind of have to get close and have an idea, but the goal is for you to get rid of your cards, not to know what the rule is, which is really great.
You could be clueless and get told you're the winner.
All right. Is there anything you don't like about this game?
I mean, I didn't like how frustrated people got.
Yeah.
I enjoy games and I enjoy enjoying games with other people. And so when people get frustrated or get down on themselves, Jared mentioned that he was the Debbie Downer when the first time we played this game, and he 100% was, because when I demoed it at Gen Con, I went and found Jared and I was like, come look at this really, really cool game. And I brought him back and we demoed it together. And he's like, I don't get it. And then here we are, 2 years later playing it at our table. And he was just kind of grumpy the whole time. And so that was kind of a downer. And you were very grumpy and you were like, just talking about how stupid you were the whole time. So, and I don't know. And I guess that's a difference in personality of people that are faced with challenging things. Some people think, oh, because it's challenging, something's wrong with me. And then other people are like, oh, because it's challenging, that's fun. Like, I have to rise to the occasion. I have to whatever. And you do that in other areas. I'm not saying like you're a certain type. I'm not categorizing you right now, Jared.
It's fine.
But I also had one table that I taught at the convention that was that way. Their first game took 30 minutes, which is just crazy because it was half of our entire teach. And usually this game does not take 30 minutes, but we had the person that first decided to be the knower was very picky about what she was allowing in the categories. And so I think that, several things that I would have been like, oh yeah, that totally works. She'd be like, I don't think so. Cause it was one of those where it was like most, or this is easy for most people or whatever. And so it made it take a really long time. And I could tell that the table was getting very discouraged. The knower was having a lot of fun, but nobody else was having fun at the table. And so I kind of just took control the next game. And I was like, okay, guys, these cards scale. I'm just going to pick the cards this time instead of us randomly picking it. And nobody wanted to be the knower. So I was like, you're going to be the knower this time. You're going to do great. And I like talked her through the cards and like coached her through it. And they ended up playing two more games of it after that. And their experience got a lot better after that. But it was discouraging to have that one game that dragged on and everybody seemed just kind of upset with themselves. So that would be a con of the game. But I think it could be helped by using some of the scaling aspects of the game if you've got a group that has a bad first experience.
Or having heard this description here, or like having heard some people's takes on the game ahead of time, because I do know that some people like have that insecurity of feeling like they're not good at things. And if you know going into it, you're not going to feel good at this right away. That's how it's designed. You can't just jump in it and your first three guesses are not going to be correct for what the rings mean. And so we talked about what you were worried about. Well, I was worried about teaching it because I was worried that I was going to have a bunch of people disappointed in themselves. And then the knower that might be overly stressed on their side. So, if you have a way to prep yourself to be gentle on yourself, then you can sort of approach it that way.
What score would y'all give this on a rating of 1 to 10? And you can caveat it like we did with our game, or you can just do straight up whatever you want to do.
For a gaming group that likes games, I think it's like 7.5, 8. I think it's a really good one. For maybe newbies, it might fall a little lower, but I still think it's a good addition. And I think something like the artwork makes it approachable, and that's really positive. So I think even for newbies, I'd only dock it to like a 6, 6.5. It would still be a positive.
Yeah, I think I fall in a similar place with Kaylee. So we don't review a ton of party games or even word games on this podcast. And I don't really think it's fair to compare a party game necessarily to like one of my favorite games, Terraforming Mars, which is just very strategy based. So I feel like I've got to take it in its own category as a party game. And if I take it as a party game, it might be one of my favorites because it feels like a party game. It feels a little bit more social and conversational, and you can get like tons of people. Sometimes I feel like party games are just kind of annoying, and this one feels like a party game that isn't annoying. So I would give it maybe like a 9 if I'm comparing it just against party games itself. I'm trying to think about like if there's any other party game I like better than this one. There probably is. I don't know. But I really like this one. and then probably if you're just comparing it against all games in general, it would be a 7 or an 8. And that's because I would probably only get it out with people that I knew that did like party games. If I had big groups, or if I had mixed groups of people that were, some were gamers and some were not. If I've got a group of, you know, 4 gamers, we're not going to play this game, probably.
Mm. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I would give it a 7.5. I don't like docking games because I'm not good at them. And this game stresses me out because I'm not good at them. but it's not fair to then penalize the game for that. So despite the stress that it causes me, I acknowledge that it is a very well done design, and I love that it gives a different way of playing the word association game structure. Awesome. Well, hey, thank you guys for jumping in on that. We're going to spend a couple minutes on Funky Town, and then we'll wrap up this episode. So in a second, I'm going to ask everyone to share their favorite game and maybe like a couple sentences on what great time you had at Funky Town. Scott and I got to be on Table Topics with Haley next week. And so if you want to hear more about our experiences, please feel free to go check that out. And I'll just start. And I think this is everybody's second favorite game of the con is what they're going to say, because we all loved a new game that was debuted at Funky Town from Bezier Games. It is by Ben Rossett. We can't talk about it too much. I got confirmation from the publisher while we were driving back that we can only share the name and give our thoughts on a little bit of an overview, but nothing too deep because changes are still being made. But The Game Makers by Ben Rossett is coming out. It's probably coming to Kickstarter later this year. And they had a prototype at the convention. Everybody in this car loved it. We couldn't stop talking about it all weekend long and just had a great time with it. It is about board game manufacturing, and they are bringing in actual board games for you to make. There's, I think I heard, over 100 different publishers and over 400 different titles, and they're talking about ways to add in even more, which I think is really cool, and I can't wait to see what they finalize with that. But for everybody else in the car, if we could just take like a minute or two and just talk about Game Makers, the other favorite game that you had, and then maybe a thing or two that you liked about the con, and then we'll wrap up. So Scott, why don't you start, buddy?
So, yeah, I think Game Makers is going to be excellent. I really loved the simultaneous actions that we could play. It's very rare that everybody agrees that on a great game, especially with different varying levels of what they like and different levels of experience. But my second favorite game behind that one would be the Minecraft game, which was really a surprise for me. I kind of had like a mid-level expectation, but when we actually got into it, I really found it to be really fun and matched the gameplay elements of the actual video game really well. The only thing I didn't really have was the health aspect, where there's like in Minecraft, for example, surviving is such a key part of the game. So I think that maybe they could add that element as well. But other than that, you really do feel like you're mining and you're trying to find resources to build and fighting off mobs, gathering equipment and all of that. So it was really fun.
That's awesome, man. And that's Minecraft Builders and Biomes by Ravensburger. Kaylee, what was one of your favorites from the con?
I enjoyed a lot, but something that stands out to me as unique was a game I saw on the organizer shelf, on Mike's shelf, called Dive. And it's a game purely based on your own vision and depth perception. You have these beautiful translucent tiles that are in a stack, and they have all kinds of sea life, but the parts that matter are sharks, turtles, or manta rays. And you have to guess how deep you think each of those elements are so that you can safely dive and navigate the waters as you go on. And it was just such a cool setup, such a cool experience, beautiful, visually interesting. And then when we played with companion animals, it got competitive very fast. And the intensity level sort of shot up because I was playing with Anna and she had an ability to give me a countdown. That changed everything. But it was really great. It was a great experience for me. And I'm glad I spotted it on the shelf.
That's awesome. And that's Dive by Sit Down Games. Anna, what about you?
Well, my second favorite game, because my first favorite was the Game Makers game. It was a really, really good game. I'm excited for it to come to Kickstarter. I'm excited for us to try it out, all the listeners to get to try it out. One of my favorite aspects of it was the worker aging process made different resources come available at different times. So you really had to plan ahead with your worker aging to get the resources. I thought that was a really cool component of the game. But my second favorite was a game that Ian brought called Awkward Guests. I requested that Ian bring this because I played it for the first time when he brought it last year, but I was really tired. It was late at night. So I wanted to try it out again and just had a blast. Awkward Guests is essentially, if you've ever played the board game Clue growing up, it's like a nice big grown-up version of that where there's a lot more information. You've got cards that have pieces of information because there's been a murder in the house and you're trying to figure out which one of the guests did the murder and what their motive was and how they got to the victim and what weapon they used. And so there's different cards you're exchanging throughout the game to try to figure out that information and be the first one to solve the mystery. And anybody that knows me, I like a good deduction puzzle solving game. So I really like that one.
Awesome. And that was Awkward Guests by Megacorpin Games. Ian, what you got, buddy?
The Game Makers, I mean, fantastic. So I don't know. There's nothing that I can say, one that...
We're allowed to
don't
say.
Want to spoil it, so
we can't say it yet.
Yeah, when you see it come to Kickstarter or whatever platform they use, back it because it's great. A game that is played that I enjoyed. I think all of them. I had a really good time playing a lot of games. All the play to wins, we played a lot of them, and we won some and we lost some, and I think they were all really good. I do think my best experience was Let's Go to Japan, which is a great game. We've talked about it on this podcast before, but we were able to knock out a 5-player game in like an hour. It was crazy. And so yeah, with the expansion
and new players,
it's a great game, and you're creating a trip to Japan, and you get points based on what types of things you saw. So it's just an easy, fun game that anybody can hop into. So I always enjoy that, and it was definitely a highlight again.
It's awesome. And that's Let's Go to Japan by AEG. My highlight that I want to mention is a little card game. It actually kind of surprised me because we got to play a lot of games this weekend and a lot of really great experiences. But I kind of got a little nostalgic on this one. Kodama by Indie Board and Card. We used to play this game a lot with some friends that kind of moved out of our lives a little bit and kind of put that game down and didn't get to really play it for a number of years. And Kaylee, thankfully, is very much in love with cute games, and so she immediately pulled this one off the shelf, and we were able to play, and I just had a really good time with it. It was such a fun little experience, and I really enjoyed it, so it was fun to pull that one back out. But yeah, so with all that, Mike, the organizer, thank you so much for putting together a fun little con. For inviting us back. It is so special to be able to do this, and looking forward to next year. And thank you to all of you listeners. We really appreciate you taking the time to listen with us. If you have feedback on any of these games, if you have feedback on going to conventions, make sure and check out our Table Topics episode to get some more conversation on that. Also, please, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description. If you don't like socials, I get it. Check out our website at thegametablepodcast.com. Shoot us an email at thegametablepodcast@gmail.com or find us on BoardGameGeek. All these links are also in the description. 5-star reviews, subscribing in your podcast player of choice, following us on socials, and joining the conversation on Discord. All of these heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. Special thanks to Angie Santiago for our cover art, to Anna Snyder who made the intro and outro music, and to Alexi Chistlin for the help play background music. We look forward to joining you again next week. And in the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.